Joseph Smith and Mormonism, motherfucker, deep fat fried bitch. Haha, what can you really say?
Deep fat fried!
Deep fat fried.
So before we do talk about anything interesting, well, first of all, only about 13,000 people who watch this channel saw our big announcement, even though it says right there, important announcement.
Important.
Important announcement, and you don't click it?
You fucking retard. So first of all, the important announcement that you stupid bastards didn't think was worthy of a click is that we're doing the first ever deep fat fried meetup in Los Angeles. Probably on July 21st, but the date's not totally confirmed yet.
Will be soon, though.
We will have...
It will in all likelihood be on that date. Late July, for sure, so yeah. Clear your fucking calendar.
Clear your stupid, miserable, shitty fucking calendar.
Tickets will be on sale soon.
I know you guys got a lot of, I was supposed to sit in my room and spurg out on the 21st.
I was supposed to go spelunking, guys.
Come spurg out with us.
Spurg out live
and
with
Marshall
PFF.
Manson.
Oh, 21 plus, so...
Yeah. Sorry,
you fucking 21 minus people.
Keep your teenage
if you're
asses
not 21
at home.
Plus,
stay home.
The men
faggots.
Have drinking to do.
We got drinking. We got drinking, and we got fucking other things. It's gonna be a big stage show. It's gonna be all kinds of crazy shit. More details will come as we have them available. But for now, all you need to know is it's happening, and it's gonna be the most epic shit you've ever seen in your stupid fucking lives.
Stay tuned.
Hopefully, the first of many.
And also, I believe that once tickets are available, patrons might be getting first crack at that link.
They might be getting first dibs, so if you're not a patron, what the hell is wrong with you, you stupid fucking retards?
They might find out a day or two ahead of you guys so that they can get their tickets bought. And
I think it's time for an old friend to return to tell them about the Patreon, actually.
Oh, okay.
Oh, shit, dude.
I think it's time for an old friend...
I'll just turn
to
my
come back.
Off, oh, shit, dude.
Greetings, deep fat fried. It is I, your overlord, Dr. Segmento, gracing you with my presence once again to warn you away from the deep fat fried and pessimist productions Patreon. Look at me. Look how fat and sallow I am. How do you think I got this way? I got this way by feasting on the content over at the Pessimist Productions Patreon. That's what I did. I ate and ate and ate until I became the grotesque monstrosity that you see before you. I weep for my state. Become a patron at your own risk. Look at what it's done to me.
Real sad story.
Wow.
Dude.
Real fucking... That's hardcore shit.
I didn't realize.
That's what Pessimist Productions Patreon does
to people. How do you
feel
when Dr. Segmento takes over, dude? Like, do you just like... Are you just like totally...
When he takes over...
Yeah, dude.
You assume he's not already in control.
Oh, shit.
I know you guys are two distinct entities. Don't even play that game.
I am but a vessel.
You're the vessel?
He's
that,
the
that,
vessel.
That is filled...
The lesser.
That is filled to the brim
with
Segmento-y goodness.
Segmento reigns supreme. You know, I know... Because if I go to the pantry and I'm like, man, there's some Oreos, but man, I'm getting kind of fat. Segmento's like, eat, you fool, and I'll just do
eat.
It, you know?
Right.
There's no, my brain can't compete with him.
Whoa,
it must
dude.
Be horrible having such a megalomaniacal entity on the front of you controlling everything you do.
Yeah, it's got its pros and cons, you know?
It's like TJ's crane, dude.
Pros and cons.
All right.
So,
fair enough.
Tonight's topic is this fellow here in the corner. I'm assuming that's a pretty idealized depiction that we're looking at.
He often stood around, you know, statuesque.
Look at those fucking blue, like, just like crystal blue eyes and shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
In actuality, he probably was all deformed and shit.
It's probably one ugly son of a bitch.
Missing all his
teeth. Probably looked all like
big
TJ.
Googly eye.
So you guys want to know a little bit about him?
Sure. How would you not want to know about this man?
I mean, look how resplendent
I mean,
he is.
I mean, TJ would be sucking his dick if he was, you know, a real person.
So he's born in
dude.
Vermont. December 23rd, 1805. Okay. His father was a merchant and a farmer. His family wasn't doing too well in Vermont. They weren't very good at what the, you know, the farm was not, the crops failed years in a row and shit.
I think for the mythology, he should have been a carpenter just like Jesus, dude.
Well, he's not. Sorry.
I'm a little disappointed.
Well, his father, he wasn't a merchant and farmer. That's what his father was.
Not that his father should have been a carpenter, dude.
Okay. Well, he wasn't. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I'm disappointed.
So they had shit luck in Vermont, so they decided to move out to New York, right? And they did that when he was about 11. Eventually, they got a 100-acre farm in the town of Manchester. All right? So New York was this big hotbed of religion at the time. And there, you know these dumbass tent revivals?
Oh, yeah.
People go, you know, like the big, yeah, you know, they all go to the tent.
The Lord will wash you with his blood. Yeah.
That was a big thing in the New York area around those times, you know, weird-ass tent revivals. Smith was super enamored with religion, especially he had an inclination towards Methodism, which I don't really know much about Methodism. All I know is that they believe that everyone has the potential to be saved. Not that everyone will be saved, but everyone has the potential.
It could
saved.
Happen. Look,
whereas
guys,
like the Calvinists
happen.
Believe that God has like a select chosen few that,
right. And if
you know,
you're not in the club, well, it doesn't really matter for you. You're not saved.
You're just fucked.
Right.
Smith was attracted towards Methodism, but his family was like all over the map when it came to religion, and so it kind of created some conflict in him, where, you know, he believed in God, he believed in Jesus, but he wasn't sure which version of the bullshit was true. I guess it never occurred to him, maybe it's all bullshit.
Yeah, never had that thought.
And if he did, he decided to exploit
you're
it.
You're kind of saying he created Mormonism to bring his family together, dude.
Maybe.
Come on, that's why he did
so
it.
So in 1820 is when Smith had his first vision.
Oh, he had a vision.
And in his vision, God himself, like not an angel, but God.
God,
the God.
G
yeah.
-D, God.
He comes to visit Joseph Smith, right?
What honor.
I guess he was like 15 years old at the time. So 15-year-old Joseph Smith gets a visit from God, the creator of the fucking universe. And he tells Joseph Smith that all of the churches of the earth had turned aside from the gospel. So basically, all of the religions...
It's all wrong.
It's all wrong. It's all bullshit. They've all turned from the proper path. Smith went to a local pastor, or I'm sorry, a preacher. And he told him about the experience, and the preacher was just like fucking pissed. You know, like obvious, you know, he wants to nip this shit in the bud, you know, real quick.
Right.
You didn't see no God. That was the devil tricking you or whatever the fuck, you know. So in 1823, 3 years later, Smith was visited by the angel Moroni. I think it's actually pronounced Moroni, but it's more fun to say
Moroni.
Moroni.
Yeah.
Moroni, dude.
Yeah.
It is I, Moroni.
And Moroni told him of a buried book. Made of golden plates.
Dude, was Joseph Smith just eating some fucking like mushrooms and shit? And
he
then
was
just
on psychedelics.
Yeah, and just hallucinating like, whoa.
Moroni followed by the angel Idios and the angel Dipshiticus.
Dipshiticus, man. So, he tells him there's a bunch of golden plates and some seer stones. And a bunch of other magical bullshit.
What the fuck?
Right by his daddy's
stone?
House.
I mean,
a seer stone, it's like it's supposed to grant you like abilities to see certain things.
When
like,
you look at the rock, you're supposed to see.
Yeah,
other
you know, like
why
okay. Prophecies and you know.
So you talk to God. Why couldn't God just be like, "Here's all the knowledge you need. I'm God." Snap his fingers, and it's like, "Thanks, God." And he just puts all the information down.
Smith had to prove himself.
Oh, he had to. Oh shit! So God was testing him. He's like, "Go find the tablets."
So
bitch.
Where was the golden plates and the seer stones and stuff buried?
Anywhere in the world? Where could it be?
It was buried in a hill near Smith's.
Wow!
Just wow! What a coincidence!
Now he
what
doesn't.
Luck.
He doesn't go get them right away. He tries, but Moroni, with Dipshiticus and Idioticus and all the other angels show up, and they're like, "No, you may not remove the sacred plates and the seer stones from their place of rest."
He had to wait like was it 4 years or some shit?
Well, I don't know. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So Smith's family. In the meantime, was having financial hardship, right? And ever...
Sounds like they were constantly having financial hardship.
Yeah, they pretty much were. But, you know, their new farm wasn't working out any better than their old farm. I guess they just were kind of shitty
farmers.
They
just sucked at farming.
Right.
Dude.
And ever the pragmatist, Smith decides that he needs to help out his family, and he figures there's no better way than to become a treasure hunter. So he got all these people to invest in his expeditions to hunt for treasure. He claimed that he had a seer stone, not one of the seer stones in the hill, but his own seer stone that would lead him to treasure.
So basically,
and some rich saps bought
into
it.
Yeah, Joseph Smith learned he could be a con artist at that point. He's like, wait a minute, we suck at farming, but I'm pretty good at telling lies.
I think he started as one. I'm starting to get the idea that his family was just kind of like anything to make a buck.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they were all over the place religiously, that means none of them were probably very devout because they were all living together and shit. So it was probably just taking various stabs at how can I make money without doing anything.
Right. And so he got a bunch of stupid investors to invest in his treasure hunts. He never found a goddamn coin.
I am so shocked.
Not a shock. Not a shock.
So at this point, he finds a woman he wants to marry. Her name is Emma Hale. Her father objects because he doesn't want his daughter marrying some crazy treasure hunter who can't support himself.
Yeah, some dude following a rock around in the wilderness and finding.
Oh, where is the treasure?
Where's Blackbeard's gold? You know, come on.
Tell me the secrets.
Can't blame him there. I mean, come on.
So the stupid bitch elopes with Smith anyway and gets married.
Of course she does.
Because she's a dumbass. And eventually, you know, her dad is like, well, I guess she's married to this loser. So her dad tells Smith, okay, fine, you win. Come back here. I'll hook you up with a real job. You just got to promise to stop with this treasure hunting nonsense. And so Smith agrees, and he goes back. It wasn't until 1827 that the angel Moroni finally decides to let Smith remove the golden tablets from the hill.
Let's be honest.
Yes.
It wasn't until 1827 that Joseph Smith got tired of trying to have a real life and real job and decided to resurrect Moroni, the angel.
Right.
Right. Got it. Okay.
But there was a condition.
Oh, shit, dude.
To him being allowed to go get the gold tablets.
Can never have a real job again.
Did it involve people paying him a bunch of money?
Not quite.
Oh, shocker.
Not quite. The condition is that no one else is allowed to see the tablets.
Oh
well.
I mean, that's very, you know, I mean, I can understand that provision. I mean, if you find some, you know, relic of God, why would you want to prove that you have it?
Yeah, the old, you know, I have a dragon in my backyard one.
So Smith translating the tablets.
Remember, Joseph Smith has no formal training or education.
Right. But he's got the seer stones, you know.
Oh, he's got the special stone.
Right.
He holds up the ring of power.
So he translates the plates, which are written in a language called Reformed Egyptian.
Okay.
Which, by the way, is the writings. Yeah, the writings are non-existent. They're gibberish. They don't even fit the time period. Like, everything that's been examined by this stuff is just total bonk.
So at this point, I'd like us to take a look at the... it's a cartoon we've all probably seen before. It's created by Jeremiah Films. It's about the Mormon faith. The cartoon is from a Christian perspective, but it's pretty, from what I can tell, it's pretty accurate as an explanation of Mormon theology, and it's a pretty entertaining one. So headphones on. Let's take a little look at this cartoon, and we're going to get into Mormon theology for a while, but we will revisit the life of Joseph Smith.
Joseph Smith was called a prophet.
Because his life actually gets way more interesting once he founds this religion, but I think we should get into the actual theology of what he translated here.
The founder.
The beliefs of Mormonism.
Part 1.
Regardless of its Christian veneer, the basic tenets of Mormonism are in direct conflict with biblical Christianity. The following piece of animation, based directly on actual Mormon publications, highlights these major doctrinal differences.
Okay. Mormonism teaches that trillions of planets scattered throughout the cosmos are ruled by countless gods who once were human like us.
Cool.
Yeah.
They say that long ago on one of these planets, to an unidentified god and one of his goddess wives, a spirit child named Elohim was conceived. This spirit child was later born to human parents who gave him a physical body. obedience.
You got to give Mormon teachings, Joseph death, Smith some credit resurrection. For spinning such an interesting line of bullshit, dude.
I don't really get this first part. So he spent, like, wait a minute. They have a spirit child, but that child has to be born to human parents?
Yes. Right.
So what is it before it was a spirit child? How did they birth a spirit child?
Well, it was it was born as a spirit.
Well, it also gives Joseph Smith divinity in the storyline as well.
I guess you'll see. Hold on.
Himself worthy and was elevated to godhood as his father before him. Mormons believe that Elohim is their heavenly father and that he lives with his many goddess wives on a planet near a mysterious star called...
Damn, Elohim is a...
Elohim's a fucking that's what I'm saying, dude.
Don't be talking shit about Elohim, dude. Look how he's chilling, Paul. You chilling like that, dude?
I don't know what you heard about Elohim. He's a pimp, dude.
Yeah, unfortunately, they all look kind of the same. Like, you think he want to spice it up a little bit.
Nah, dude.
He's got a taste. He likes
them
blonde.
Just like, he knows what he likes. He knows what he wants.
I mean,
and he's got.
The only thing
that
sucks about
it.
Mormonism is how it really devalues being a god. It's like there's all these gods. It's like it's not just like one god. It's like there's fucking trillions of gods.
The cool thing about it though is that you can actually become a god in Mormonism. You know?
Oh.
Like you don't have to just settle for this.
Dude,
fucking...
they said there was trillions of planets and trillions of gods. Dude. Right. That seems pretty lame. Just to be honest with you.
Well, no, but you get.
Well, one, there hasn't been a trillion humans.
You get to be. Yeah. Well, that's why.
Or cats, gods, and shit.
Well, I mean, if all these planets have humans, that means that you know there have been trillions.
So
humans.
So they plan for expansion.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. You know. You can always add another planet or two.
Here, the god of Mormonism and his wives, through endless celestial sex, produced billions of spirit children.
Awesome, dude.
To decide their destiny, the head of the Mormon gods called...
Wait, Elohim himself had billions of children?
Yes.
That's like... How much? That's a ton of sex.
Right. All the time.
That's all he does,
constantly.
Dude.
He said endless celestial sex.
Elohim is not at this fucking council meeting, dude. He's fucking...
He must be fucking all those chicks at once.
Yeah, dude.
Like, to get to a billion.
I mean, think about...
He's a god.
Yeah, I mean, he's a god, dude. He can fuck all he wants.
So he can just... How does he do it, though? Does he become a different... Like, make copies of himself to fuck each one of the wives? Or does he have, like... A mini-headed hydra of a cock.
He's a fucking... Like, he has assembly line, dude. He just goes boom, 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 boom.
He has like a belt that goes by and all his wives are
conveyor
bent
belt.
Over.
He's like boom, 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 boom.
Blows a
boom,
load in each one.
Yeah,
boom.
And he's blowing the most massive
and
fucking...
And then the next station
load.
Over, they're just giving birth to celestial babies.
Boom,
new
boom,
celestial
boom,
baby,
boom,
new celestial baby, new celestial...
Just they just keep coming around. Wow.
You know, for several hours at a time, he's just like, yeah, bitch,
take it. I think Joseph... Not Joseph, Elohim can fucking probably produce about... A million fucking spirits a day, dude.
Elohim just fucking pumps out
a million spirits
a
day, dude. He's fucking on top of it.
He's hardcore.
Damn.
Yes, people in the chat are already saying he's way cooler than the Christian God, so.
All the great heavenly council meeting.
Oh, shit. He's got a
Both of Elohim's eldest sons were there. Lucifer and his brother Jesus. A plan was presented to build planet Earth. Where the spirit children would be sent to take on mortal bodies and learn good from evil. Lucifer stood and made his bid for becoming savior of this new world. Wanting the glory for himself, he planned to force everyone to become gods. Opposing the idea, the Mormon...
Wait, force everyone to become gods?
Whoa,
yeah, why
what?
Is that a bad thing?
Man, Jesus, you fucking suck, dude. Lucifer's plan was awesome. They all get to be gods, and it's like, what's wrong with that?
Look at this smug fuck Jesus. It's like, I want everybody to get to be gods like us. Jesus is like, oh, no, no, no. Why not? Killjoy.
Jesus sucks. Team Satan.
Jesus
right,
suggested
dude.
Giving man his freedom of choice, as Ooh. On other planets.
What? What kind
the
of choice is there?
Approve the proposal of...
What about my freedom? Okay, if I'm supposed to have my freedom of choice, I choose to become a god... Can I just become
no.
a god?
The council already decided.
Who would become savior of the planet Earth.
Damn it!
Enraged.
You know, Jesus in this cartoon, he doesn't really look like him, but for some reason he reminds me of Tom Brady, dude.
What?
God, okay.
Okay.
It's just that fucking smug-ass look on his face. Like, yeah, I'm the greatest, and everyone knows I'm the greatest.
Lucifer cunningly convinced one-third of the spirits destined for Earth to fight with him in revolt.
Awesome.
Well, yeah,
dude.
He wanted them to be gods. Of course. No, yeah. Why? What's wrong with the other two thirds? Is my fucking question.
Thus, Lucifer became the devil, and his followers the demons.
Cool.
Sent to this world, they would forever be denied bodies of flesh and bone. Those who remained neutral in the battle were cursed to be born with black skin. This is the Mormon explanation for the Negro race. The spirits...
Mormons have backed down from that position, by the way.
So wait a minute, like being neutral?
Yeah.
We don't want to get involved. Ah, you're cursed by being black.
Your disgusting neutrality sickens us. You would be born black.
The people that fought,
the
for
Jesus.
The more
neutral you were, the blacker you shall be.
And the people that fought for Jesus were fucking totally, they're blonde hair, blue eyed Aryan white people, dude. Wow. That's how that works.
I just want to say that contemporary Mormonism has backed
away
from this racist shit.
They've kind of backed
shit,
down from
though,
this.
So.
I mean, what choice did they have?
Yeah, not much.
Can't really keep doing that.
Most valiantly against Lucifer would be born into Mormon families on planet Earth. These would be the lighter-skinned people, or white and delightsome, as the Book of Mormon describes.
Gross.
White.
Early Mormon prophets taught that Elohim and one of his goddess wives came to Earth as Adam and Eve to start the human race.
Wait, so Elohim, so the god of Mormonism is also Adam?
Yeah.
Neat.
Thousands of years.
I mean, he doesn't want anybody else to do any fucking.
He's like, it's
later,
for me to fuck.
Elohim, in human form once again, journeyed to Earth from the starbase Kolob, this time to have sex with the Virgin Mary. In order to provide Jesus.
Deflower the Virgin
Mary
with a physical body.
Whoa. Well, you're not.
I'm here to fuck you.
I guess that even though all of his wives are blonde, he will get with a brunette on like a little weekend excursion.
On the condition of fucking.
Like he knocked on her door? So like, wait a minute. The Virgin Mary is chilling in her house one day.
Totally virginal.
Totally
and shit.
Virginal. Betrothed to Joseph or whatever the fuck he was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chilling at her house, doing the dishes and sweeping the floor and shit. And this dude comes and knocks this dude right here.
Right.
Comes and knocks on the door, and he's like, I'm God, and I'm going to fuck you. And she's like, okay.
I am Elohim. Spread thy legs.
Like, so, but that doesn't sound like it would go down that way. So what's the alternative? That he showed up and was like, knock, knock, I'm here to rape your fucking pussy now.
Paul, this is Elohim. She instantly was just like,
I mean,
take
she
me.
Instantly just knew, like, this is God. And
this
I
guy
gotta
can
give
sling
up the
some
pussy.
Dick. Yeah. He's had
after
billions,
Jesus
billions
Christ
of kids.
Grew to manhood, he took at least three wives, Mary, Martha, and Mary Magdalene.
Sweet.
Through these wives, the Mormon Jesus, for whom Joseph Smith claimed direct descent, supposedly fathered a number of children before he was crucified.
Neat.
According to the Book of Mormon, after his resurrection, Jesus came to the Americas to preach to the Indians, who the Mormons believe are really Israelites.
You got that?
Okay.
So after Jesus died, he decided to go to the Americas and talk to the Indians.
Okay? Let them know what's up.
Who are really the Israelites.
Who are still running from Pharaoh, I guess?
I guess so, yes.
Okay.
Thus, the Jesus of Mormonism established his church in the Americas as he had in Palestine.
What a clumsy battle. Die, Indian.
By the year 421 AD, the dark-skinned Indian Israelites, known as Lamanites, had destroyed all of the white Nephites in a number of great battles. The Nephites' records were supposedly written on golden plates and buried by Moroni, the last living Nephite in the hill Cumorah.
So wait.
1,400 years later, a young treasure seeker named Joseph Smith, who was known for his tall tales, claimed to have uncovered these same gold plates near his home in upstate New York.
Cool.
He is now honored by Mormons as a prophet, because he claimed to have had visions from the spirit world in which he was commanded to organize the Mormon Church. because all Christian creeds were an abomination. It was Joseph Smith who originated most of these peculiar doctrines, which millions today believe to be true.
Fools!
By maintaining a rigid code of financial and moral requirements and through performing secret temple rituals for themselves and the dead, the Latter-day Saints hope to prove...
I love how at this point, I kind of love that this is made by Christians. Like, they got all kinds of weird rituals
evil.
And stuff.
They're wacky.
How weird this is.
Not like us.
Yeah, somebody just made up their religion, unlike us.
Prove their worthiness and thus become gods.
Cool.
The Mormons teach that everyone must stand at the final judgment before Joseph Smith, the Mormon Jesus, and Elohim.
This is a bit of an oversimplification. We're actually going to get more into the Mormon afterlife later on
cool.
in the show.
Those Mormons who were sealed in the eternal marriage ceremony expect to become polygamous gods in the celestial kingdom,
sweet.
Rule over other planets, and spawn
new... I mean, as far as afterlives go, the Mormons have a pretty cool...
Pretty dope.
Yeah.
Don't Jehovah's Witnesses have the same kind of idea?
I'm not sure.
Don't they get, like, their own planet and shit?
Maybe we'll do an episode on them, too.
Families throughout eternity. The Mormons thank God for Joseph Smith, who claimed that he had done more for us than any other man, including Jesus Christ.
I mean, who could dispute that?
That's kind of, I mean, that's another thing in this thing that's kind of like, just like these Christians trying to throw shade.
Right.
I wasn't able to find anything where Joseph Smith was like, I'm better than Jesus.
Right.
Maybe he said it at some point, but I wasn't able
dude,
to verify
big,
that detail.
What he meant to say is that he's bigger than Jesus.
Because I had to kind of fact check this cartoon because I know it's from a biased source and stuff.
I mean, of course.
And there's a few oversimplifications and stuff, but for the most part, this is a pretty fair
like the tribunal thing where they go before they die. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
The Mormon,
this is meant to be just a simple explanation of Mormonism.
Mormons believe that he died as a martyr, shed his blood for us, so that we too may become God.
Cool. Let's do it.
Baby, come gods.
I'm down.
Wasn't Satan's idea to just let us be gods in the first? This is, you don't need this part. But this is fucking crazy. Okay, by the way, little known fact. In 1971, the Mormon population of the earth was 3,090,953. That's 1971. Okay. 2017, last year, you want to take a guess how many Mormons there were?
8 million.
8 million. Mm.
Really?
No, you said that was your guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
8 million.
I would guess 15 million.
Well, Scotty, you're right, actually. It's closer to 16.
Wow.
15,882,417.
They're growing like a cancer.
They're growing like crazy.
What the fuck?
And part of it's due to their high birth rates. And part of it's due to their actually pretty respectable conversion rates, too.
A lot of people, like, move over to Mormonism from other shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's pretty crazy. I wanted to kind of devote some of this episode, because, you know, we've all told the jokes about the magic underwear.
Yeah.
That Mormons have to wear. How much do you guys know about that?
As far as I know, like, what I think I know about it is that they have to wear it in bed together, and mm-hmm. they have to, like, fuck through it, don't they?
I believe that they're supposed to wear it. There's very few instances where they're allowed to take it off. Let's take a look at this. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Mm-mm.
This is what Mormons are expected to wear at all times.
Underneath their clothes?
Yes.
Okay.
They're supposed to wear these day and night. They're only allowed to take them off for very specific activities like swimming. And even then, they're commanded to put them back on as soon as possible afterwards. The official name for these underwear is a temple garment, also referred to as the garments of the holy priesthood. Or sometimes just Mormon underwear.
Dude, so
that's a holy banana hammock.
So this is a fucking... So Mormonism is an even bigger scam than I thought. Because you know they're going to these fucking temples, and it's like, where do you buy it? You got to buy it from this one source.
Yeah, they've got merch, dude. You got to get the blessed underwear from the temple.
Tired of wearing non-blessed underwear?
The church's handbook, leaders are instructed to tell members that they should wear the garments both day and night. They should not alter them. In the temple recommend interview, members are asked if they wear the garment day and night according to the covenants made in the temple, although the temple ordinance only states that you must wear the garment throughout your life. Members are told that they should not partially or completely remove any portion of the garment to participate in activities they can reasonably be done with the garment worn properly beneath the clothing, such as working in the yard. When necessary, the garment may be temporarily removed, but members are told that after the activity, they should put it back on as soon as possible. Swimming is the most common example given.
What about fucking?
They're supposed to fuck through it.
So it's got like a hole in the crotch?
Yes.
And the little cod piece comes off or something?
Dude, this shit must smell awful, dude.
I mean, they're allowed to wash it. Garment wearers are also instructed they should not adjust the garments or wear them in any way that would accommodate the wearing of what church considers to be immodest clothing. So basically, if you're wearing anything that doesn't cover this completely, like, you're not allowed to show this off to non-believers. Like, if any part of this is sticking out of your clothing, then you're dressed too immodestly, basically.
Got it.
So, you know, like, you'll never see a Mormon woman wearing like a spaghetti strap fucking, you know, tank top or something.
Or a tube top. Or
yeah, because it's immodest. If anything of this is showing, then you're doing it wrong. Now, they don't like, people calling them magic underwear, obviously.
Right.
This is from Urban Dictionary, so this might not be the most reliable source on the face of the planet, but it says that Mormons like to downplay the magic nature of their underwear and talk about reminders of sacred ordinances, etc. However, every Mormon will have heard fellow Mormons talk in hushed tones about how their underwear saved them from a fire, from cuts, from gunshots, from animal bites. So these are literally in Mormon theology supposed to provide magical protections for the wearer.
Dude, it's like the fucking like shield and halo, dude. You don't even fucking you don't need that if you're a Mormon.
God,
they're kind of like the Wakanda shield blankets,
but lamer. Somehow.
Yeah, but even lamer.
Like
the lamer, wider.
Well, let me ask you guys this question: if it actually was true, would you wear it?
No.
There you go.
I mean, like, even if this protected me from mortal danger, I wouldn't put this on.
Someone said, lol, not true, TJ. Well, it is true, according to my research. There's been protests where these garments have been profaned by anti-Mormons. Some church opponents have used public occasions like the biannual church conference to publicly mock and parody the wearing of the temple garments. During the October 2003 LDS Church General Conference, some anti-Mormon demonstrators outside of the LDS Conference Center reportedly spat and stomped on garments in view of those attending the conference. One protester blew his nose into the garment and wore it around his neck. That doesn't sound sanitary.
Yeah.
Apparently a scuffle.
In that order?
I guess.
So he blew a bunch of snot into it and then wrapped it around his neck?
Yeah, that's gross to me.
That's not a great protest, bro.
A scuffle broke out between a protester and two members of the church who attempted to take the garments from him. This is the really interesting part to me. To avoid a repeat of the conflict, the municipality of Salt Lake City planned stronger enforcement of fighting words and hate speech laws for the 2004 conference, and created a new buffer zone where people were not allowed to protest. Like, the protesters had to go farther away from the conference, basically.
Because Mormons can't control themselves?
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
No, Paul, because these protesters are antagonizing them.
Dude, we got to get some of these and just go walk around Salt Lake City in them and see what happens to us. Like, they can't bust us for it, right? Like, it looks like it covers it. It's not like it's lewd or lascivious or anything. Like, if we just got these and went walking around Salt Lake City, what do you think would happen to us?
I don't know. Probably not much.
Dude, we should do it.
Unfortunately, we have to go to Salt Lake City to do that, so.
Yeah, that would kind of suck.
That's a downer right there, man.
Yeah, those underwear are pretty lame.
I want some.
You want some?
I take it back. I will wear them.
You're going to wear them?
Yeah.
What if you found out they actually did provide magical protection? Then, would you?
All the better, dude.
Would you, dude.
I mean, would you have to, at that point, be like, maybe there's something to this Mormonism thing?
No, I'd just be glad I had some magical underwear. Fuck the bullshit. Like, if they're magic for me without me believing the bullshit, what do I need to believe the
dude,
bullshit
Paul
for?
And TJ's would have a fucking brown streaks at the back, though, man. Those are white.
Not the magic underwear, dude. You can't put a skid mark in the magic underwear.
You could fart all you want into those. They just the God magically cleans the shit from your ass.
Well, damn, dude, that sounds good.
It's a wondrous procedure, dude.
God fucking pressure washes your butthole, dude.
You guys heard of baptizing the dead? That's another thing.
Oh yeah,
Mormons
dude, you
like
have to
do.
I've heard that this happens. Yes.
There was actually some controversy because in the 90s, the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, that's the name of the Mormon church, they were caught baptizing some Jewish Holocaust victims, which they, in 1995, they're like, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. But it's still a practice of the church.
What do you mean?
Well, here's what they do. For Mormons, baptizing the dead solves a big theological problem. How do billions of people who never had the opportunity to accept Jesus Christ, including those who lived before Jesus walked the earth, receive salvation? By baptizing the dead, a practice known as posthumous proxy baptism, Mormons believe they are giving every person who ever lived the chance at everlasting life.
That's nice of them.
This includes Muslims, Hindus, atheists, pagans, whoever. So basically,
so they
they're
doing
it because they're trying to save us.
So they thought about it. You know, like a lot of Christianity, you know, some of this has been thought of before. Like some Christians believe in universal salvation. But the Mormons wanted to make sure they're like, you know what? They're dead. We're going to give them a chance anyways.
Well, it's kind of important at this point that we understand. You got to kind of understand the Mormon afterlife because there's a place in the Mormon afterlife called Spirit Prison, okay?
Oh, shit.
Spirit Prison?
Spirit Prison.
Is that where you're going, TJ?
Everyone's going there. Good or bad, you're going to Spirit Prison.
You're going there. Fuck.
One unique element of Mormonism is the concept of the fate of the soul after death. The founder of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, eventually developed a view of the afterlife that is much more complex than that held by most other Christian groups. Traditional language of heaven and hell and salvation and damnation do not work well in the Mormon context. In Mormon teachings, the final judgment comes in stages. The first stage occurs immediately after death. The disembodied spirit is judged as to its general goodness and is assigned to one of two places, paradise or spirit prison. But here's the catch. Both of those places are really prisons. The souls in paradise enjoy like peace and, you know, a time of rest. Those in the spirit prison are tormented by guilt and denied rest. But both groups ultimately suffer because they're separated from their physical bodies. You need a physical body because you're just not going to be happy. But everyone's waiting around for the second coming of Christ because it's not till the second coming of Christ that your spirit will be once again given a physical body.
Fuck, dude.
So like all the Mormons that have croaked or and everybody that's ever croaked is chilling in one form of spirit prison or another.
Yeah, they're either in spirit prison or they're in paradise, which is basically just a nicer prison.
It's like the low security prison with the art program. And
so, yeah, after Jesus comes back, you have to understand. Okay, so there's three tiers of hierarchy of heaven. Okay, so we got to understand this.
God.
It's really fucking stupid.
I love this
complicated
line of bullshit as it unfolds. It's
okay,
so
the highest level of heaven is called the celestial kingdom. It's the destination of those persons who accepted all of the necessary rituals performed by the authority of the Mormon priesthood and who were valiant in their testimony of Jesus Christ. Okay.
Okay.
That's me.
So celestial heaven is the best heaven,
but it's still a prison. Still spirit.
Like a
No, this is after that. This is when you actually get to go to heaven.
I love how in fucking Mormonism there's like tiers to heaven. It's like, oh no, you're not getting into fucking VIP heaven, dude. You're going to mid-tier heaven.
Yeah.
All right, so Mormons believe that missionary work continues among the spirits waiting in prison.
Damn.
And those who so basically, if you're in the spirit prison, you're in the shittiest prison, you're being tormented by guilt, and oh, I was such a piece of shit.
You better be selling Mormonism.
You can still convert. You still have a chance. You can still, like, okay, I'm going to go for Mormonism.
Right.
It's for this reason that Mormons perform rites on the behalf of their dead ancestors. So it's because they're still because they feel like they need to proselytize even to the dead.
Okay.
So it's basically giving all of these dead people who are never Mormons a chance at salvation. The celestial kingdom itself is divided into three parts. Okay. Mormon scripture says nothing about the lower two levels, but specifies that only those persons who are married for time and eternity in Mormon temples are eligible for the highest celestial tier. That's when you get to go be gods of your own planet and shit. The third possible destination of the soul is the telestial kingdom. It is here that all those sinners who refuse to repent will find themselves. So this is where we're going to go. In Mormon theology, Christ's suffering and death make it possible for a sinner to be released from the punishments of misdeeds in the afterlife if the sinner repents and accepts Mormon baptism. Those who do not repent suffer during the afterlife, but even the darkest sinners eventually are redeemed through the atonement of Christ in the realm of glory. While they may enjoy the influence of the Holy Ghost, residents of the celestial kingdom are deprived of the presence of the Father and the Son. So basically, if you're the worst you can get in Mormonism is you go to the celestial kingdom and you get to hang out with the Holy Ghost, but Jesus and God don't want shit to do with you.
Okay.
So you get to just kind of party.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's not too bad. So it's better than eternal hellfire and damnation.
So it's kind of just like you're fucking outside of the club, and it sounds like it's really cool in there, but you're just not allowed in. It's like
you can hear the music,
boom, 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 boom.
You can hear all the people cheering.
Jesus!
And you're just kind of like outside.
Maybe once in a while, you kind of see Jesus through a window in the club. The like, Holy Spirit, is that Jesus? But then he's like,
the Holy Spirit's all like, it's okay,
you,
guys.
Celestial kingdom,
but back the whole away from the wing.
Kind of sucks to be the Holy Spirit hanging out with all the sinners and losers, you know?
Yeah.
But whatever. So that's what, you know, it's weird, it's complicated, it's really fucking strange and stupid.
I just don't understand, like, when they baptize the dead, you were saying earlier right. They were baptizing Holocaust victims. They can't, like, go get the bodies and pour water
no.
on them.
No, here's what they do.
No, they're, okay. they're
now
graves,
that,
right?
Now that we've explained the Mormon afterlife, we can get back to this whole concept of baptizing the dead. Here's what they do. They use proxies, okay? Mormons believe there is a place the dead go where they are in spirit prison and where they have the chance to accept the Christian baptism, says Richard Bushman, a Mormon scholar at Columbia University. But it's a duty to actually perform Christian ordinance of baptism. So Mormons seek out every last person who ever lived and baptize them. Many Mormons are proud of the fact that they attempt to make their faith universal through baptizing the dead. Historically, Christians have been exclusive, says Terrell Givens, an expert on Mormonism at the University of Richmond. Catholics have taught that only Catholics are saved, and evangelicals say only if you confess, according to their tradition. Mormons say no, salvation is open to all people. And that's kind of the Methodist influence there that we talked about earlier. How do they do the baptisms? They basically have someone stand in as a proxy and get baptized. They do some little voodoo rigmarole where it's like you are now the representative of this dead person and we're going to baptize you. And they just go through the typical Mormon baptism, but instead of actually baptizing the person that's physically there being baptized, that person is just a stand-in for some dead motherfucker.
Yet again. Why can't Joseph Smith, Jesus Christ, and Elohim just grant everyone universal salvation?
That's not how it works. God has...
But why can't they...
God... Look, if there's one thing
gods,
God
why
likes,
can't, why
it's
can't
a
they
complex
just snap their fingers
bureaucracy,
and make
dude.
It so and say...
Dude,
you can,
saw in the you saw in the cartoon, dude. It's because Jesus cock-blocked Satan's good plan of making everybody gods.
Yeah, but Jesus
He's
clearly...
Like, no, they get a choice. So
but
now
Jesus
go
clearly won.
Rigmarole.
And Elohim clearly won. They got what they wanted. Why can't they just say everyone is saved and
well,
that's
what
it?
What they wanted was for people to have a choice. That's what they were arguing for. They wanted people to be able to choose their salvation or not. And Satan was like, fuck that. Don't give them a choice.
But,
just make them all gods.
But
Let's
the worst thing that can happen...
Everybody's a god.
But the worst thing that can happen is they just fucking... They don't get to be... They get to live in a fucking lesser heaven. That's it.
You gotta go telestial.
Just give them all the same fucking thing. Just give everyone the same thing.
Standing outside.
I like how they have like
club.
Just like, you know, like tiered package levels. Like, are you a gold star Mormon? You can go for the silver package, you know?
Yeah. Cash in.
I mean,
your
you don't
want to
end
clearly,
up in the celestial kingdom.
Well, clearly everyone that buys into this shit is saying, you know, the other tier, it's why the other
if
tiers
you
really
sign up for our gold tier package, you get a selfie with God.
Well,
you
that's
get a
why
selfie with Jesus.
But that's why they don't really fucking flesh out the other tiers that much because no one thinks they're going to the lesser one. It's like everyone thinks they're going to the celestial Temple, dude. They're going to fucking Disney World.
Your
man.
Budget telestial package includes FaceTime with the Holy Ghost.
Fuck no, dude.
All right, so let's get back to some of the life and times of Joseph Smith here. So we've gone into kind of what they believe. So let's kind of talk about what happened to Joseph Smith after he started this fucking crazy ass
religion. Everyone
loved him,
and he lived happily ever after.
This is where his life really gets fucking batshit crazy, honestly.
I mean, it already is. Up to
no, I mean, that was nothing. That was fucking nothing. So in October 1827, Smith and his wife move from Palmyra in New York to Harmony, Pennsylvania. It's now Oakland, Pennsylvania. He was aided by a relatively prosperous neighbor named Martin Harris. Living near his in-laws, Smith transcribed some characters that he said were engraved in the magical golden plates that he found in the hill near his home.
I'm sure he did.
And he dictated the translation to his wife. And now in February of 1828, Martin Harris decided he was going to assist Smith in transcribing his dictation.
But he wasn't allowed to show it to anybody?
No. Not at this time.
Okay.
So Harris also took a sample of the characters to a prominent scholar. So Harris wants to know that this shit's legit. So he takes it to this dude named Charles Anton. Harris said that Anton initially authenticated the characters and their translation, but then retracted his opinion after learning that Smith's claim that he received the plates from an angel.
Okay.
Anton denied this account, claiming instead that he had instantly looked at him and tried to convince Harris that he was the victim of a fraud. In any event, Harris returned to Harmony in April of 1828 and continued his work as Smith's scribe. By June, though, Harris was beginning to have some doubts. And it was because his wife was a total skeptic of this bullshit. She's just like, this is nonsense. This is not real. You're a fucking idiot. Quit getting suckered by this Smith con man.
Yeah, Joseph Smith has no background. I mean, he claims...
He's a failed treasure hunter.
I mean,
you know?
But it's like, that'd just be like if you fucking dug up some gold plates in the backyard or plates of some kind and just said, Scotty, I can fucking read this shit, and it's a bunch of scribblings and going, yeah, here you go. It's like, no, that doesn't make any sense.
It's like, even better. It's like if he came to you and said, Scotty, I dug up some gold plates. I can't show them to you.
Yeah,
but
can't even show the
I
plates.
I can read them as well. And here's what they say.
So Harris, because he's ultra skeptical of these claims, convinces Smith to let him take the existing 116 pages of manuscript to show his wife and to show her and be like, look, this is real. Now he loses the manuscript. And it's kind of believed, and you even saw this in the South Park episode that tackled Mormonism, that maybe his wife is like, look, let's pretend we lost this, and then if he can't translate it exactly the same, that shows that he's full of shit.
Right.
So, of course, when Harris goes back to Smith and says, hey, I lost the manuscript, of course, Smith is like, oh no, the angel is angry and is taking the plates away and has revoked my magical seer stone ability to translate them now.
What a shock.
Oh, wow.
But of course, the angel decided to come back and give Smith a second chance in September of 1828. And strangely, though, Harris was no longer who he was working with. He started working with a different guy named Oliver Cowdery, who was now his new little helper, replacing Harris as the scribe, and they resumed work on the manuscript. Now, you guys have talked a lot of shit about no one seeing these plates, but you're going to be fucking shocked by what happens next.
Uh-oh.
Because although Smith had previously refused to show the plates to anyone, he told Martin Harris, Oliver Cowdery, and David Whitmer that they would be allowed to see them. And these men are known as the Three Witnesses. And they signed a statement stating that they had been shown the golden plates by the angel and that the voice of God had boomed through the room, confirming the truth of the plates.
Well, there right. you go.
So, you know, because I guess, you know, maybe, I don't know how he fucking worked this. I'm assuming he just went to the mall and been like, okay, this is bullshit, I'm gonna let you in on the hustle.
Yeah.
Because they all became...
You guys want a piece of this.
They all then became prominent members of the fucking...
He's like, look,
church, of course.
Yeah, look, here, we have the scam going. I'm letting you in on the scam. Look, I know your problem is you're not getting enough. You're not getting enough out of this. Just join me in the scam.
Yeah, just say you saw the plates.
One guy's a skeptic, and now suddenly he believes again.
Later,
come on.
There was a group of 8 witnesses composed of male members of the Whitmer and Smith families. They issued a statement that they had been shown the golden plates.
Why can't he just go to the town square and say, here are the gold plates?
The angel wouldn't allow it.
Nope.
So according to...
Oh, of course.
So after that... After the 3 witnesses and then the 8 witnesses, the angel Moroni came back to take the plates away so that they would never be seen again.
Got it.
And that's how that happened.
Oh, so now the plates are gone, of course.
Right. The plates are gone forever. The angel took them back.
But he hid the plates to begin with so people would find out and read them, but now he doesn't want anyone to read them.
No. You don't understand.
Just the 8 witnesses.
The angel came back and took the plates away.
Yeah.
After
he showed him
to
the super secret club that all signed a document, I've seen it.
I fucking seen
it.
It
just so happened to all be the prominent members of the scam.
Yeah.
Okay.
Angels
yeah.
and plates.
Okay, dude. What a shock.
Like exactly.
How many times do you go in there in the kitchen, TJ, to get something to eat and you go looking for a plate and there's none clean, dude, because the angels came and fucking...
I don't know. Is your mic on, Paul?
Oh, yeah, it's on.
Okay. You're just looking a little low. Let me just fix
a little low,
Paul. Volume there.
Low energy, Paul. Sad.
Give me a test.
Test 1, 2.
Yeah, you need to be raised a little.
Raise up, Paul.
Okay.
Elohim is not challenging
Paul. Too quiet.
Now you might be too loud.
Oh, man.
God.
Whatever. I think it's fine.
Okay.
Okay, so Smith decides to take Mormonism to a place called Kirtland, Ohio.
Okay.
Take this fucking show on the road.
And he attracted a lot of converts. He even built a rather lavish temple, which you can see here. I'll go ahead and make that a little bigger for everybody. So he financed the creation of this temple. He had about 1,400 members at the height of his power in Kirtland, Ohio.
But everything, there's kind of a pattern with Joseph Smith at this point. It's that every time Mormons start getting commercial and local success and their numbers start growing and start threatening to take over the town, basically, they get run out.
Well, in this town, the story is a little different than that. In late 1837, there was a series of internal disputes that actually led to the collapse of the Kirtland Mormon community. First of all, Smith was blamed for having promoted a church-sponsored bank that ended up failing completely. He was accused of engaging in a sexual relationship with his serving girl, Fanny Alger.
It was a little horny.
The building of this temple that we're looking at put the church deeply in debt. Smith was hounded by creditors. I love his solution. So he's got his town, right? He's got his temple, and he's being hounded by creditors because he can't fucking pay his bills.
He's balls deep in Fanny Alger, dude.
Yeah, he's fucking his serving girl. So here's his solution.
Hey, man.
Here's his fucking solution.
He had to serve him up that pussy.
Quiet. You guys are going to love this. Guess what his solution to this problem is. I just want you to venture a guess.
I don't know.
I think the solution was to move again, wasn't it?
Yeah. No.
He got a hot tip from God that there was a big ass treasure in Salem, Massachusetts. So he traveled there because he heard from God that there is much treasure in this city. After a month, he returned to Kirtland empty-handed.
Oops.
Didn't work out.
It's like, yeah, so he kind of just left town, let things, you know, blow over a little bit.
So after the treasure hunt didn't work out, strangely, Smith and the other church leaders went with plan B. They created a joint stock company called the Kirtland Safety Society Anti-Banking Company. And it was a quasi-bank. The company issued banknotes capitalized in part by real estate. Smith encouraged the Latter-day Saints to buy the notes, and he invested heavily in them himself, but then the bank, or the anti-bank, failed within a month. As a result, the Latter-day Saints and Kirtland suffered intense pressure from debt collectors and severe price volatility. Smith was held responsible for the failure, and there were widespread defections from the church, including many of Smith's closest advisors. After a warrant was issued for Smith's arrest on a charge of banking fraud, Smith decides, okay, things are getting a little too hot in Kirtland, and so they decided to move the operation to Missouri.
So they just go state to state fucking up.
Yeah. They decide, okay, well, things aren't working out here in Kirtland, Ohio, so let's move to Missouri.
Missouri.
Things didn't go very well in Missouri either.
Shocking.
The church took... this is when they officially took the name the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. They started working on a new temple because... You know, the first one wasn't a big enough fucking boondoggle,
I guess. One wasn't even paid for yet.
No. They decided to go start a new one, though. During this time, the church council expelled many of the oldest and most prominent leaders of the church, including John Whitmer, David Whitmer, W.W. Phelps, and Oliver Cowdery.
Wasn't one of those guys one of the three
Two
witnesses?
Two of those guys were the witnesses. Smith explicitly approved of the expulsion of these men, who were known collectively as the Dissenters. The Missourians did not like these new Mormon fucks that were arriving in their town, or in their state, rather. By this time, Smith had experienced some mob violence against Mormonism. And he decided to go with a more militaristic tactic. So he had this guy named Samson Averd form a organization called the Danites. The Danites were basically the military wing of Mormonism. It's unclear how much Smith knew about their activities, but he clearly approved about what he did know. Rigdon, who was kind of his right-hand man at the time, delivered a sermon that implied dissenters had no place in the Mormon community. The Danites forcibly expelled them from the county, basically. So they went to this town, took it over, and anybody who wasn't Mormon, they ran them out of town. On August 6th, 1838, non-Mormons in Gallatin tried to prevent Mormons from voting. And the Election Day scuffles initiated the 1838 Mormon War. Non-Mormon vigilantes raided and burned Mormon farms, while Danites and other Mormons pillaged non-Mormon towns. So there was basically huge amounts of animosity being committed on both sides. The Mormons attacking the non-Mormons, and vice versa.
How is this guy evading justice at this point?
Well, you're going to find out pretty soon that he's not going to for long.
No, he doesn't.
In the Battle of the Crooked River, a group of Mormons attacked the Missouri State Militia.
Not a good idea.
Oops. Mistakenly believing them to be some anti-Mormon vigilantes. So Governor Lilburn Boggs.
Whoa, he sounds awesome.
He sounds fucking hardcore.
Governor Boggs, boy.
Lilburn Boggs.
Lilburn Boggs. He orders that the Mormons be exterminated or driven from the state.
Dude, you got to try and find a picture of Lilburn Boggs, dude.
All right, I'll find one for you.
I gotta see if he looks like I think he looks, because I think he's a big fat dude with like mutton chops.
I'm thinking a fucking rotund.
So Paul is guessing fat dude with mutton chops.
Yeah, and maybe a mustache too. You know, but definitely some kind of facial hair, and definitely a pudgy dude. Lilburn Boggs, dude.
Do you think that's what he looks like,
Scotty? I think he's a short, fat man.
Well, I don't know I don't know his fucking height. But Paul's spot on.
Boom!
Oh damn!
Lilburn Boggs, I knew it. I knew it.
Exterminate them.
He's got a mustache too.
The town.
Drive this riffraff.
I don't think he actually has a mustache.
It looks like he does. Go back.
If you look at it closely,
his
face is just kind of fucked up.
Got it. Okay.
He wanted to drive the riffraff from the fucking state. Not the town, Paul. The state. Wow. Kill them.
I don't blame him.
Or drive them from the state.
He's like, get fucking them out of Mormons, Missouri. Man. We don't want those fucking retards here. They attacked my.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Before they showed up, this shit wasn't happening. They show up, and then people were just fighting.
So Lilburn Boggs is like, hell no, get them out of here. On October 30th, a party of Missourians surprised and killed 17 Mormons in the Hans Mill Massacre.
Damn, dude.
So things got really fucked up and heated. So the following day, the Latter-day Saints surrendered to 2,500 state troops and agreed to forfeit them. Their property and leave the state.
Was Lilburn Boggs at the head of those troops, dude?
Well, he ordered them there. I don't know if he was leading them.
He should have been, dude. He should have been.
Smith was immediately brought before a military court, accused of treason, and sentenced to be executed the next morning.
Fuck, dude.
Dude, fuck this. This is now DFF Lilburn Boggs, dude.
Well, we'll look into him, okay?
Paul's great, great fucking grandfather.
I'm obsessed with Lilburn now.
Paul's a fucking descendant of Lilburn.
Luckily for Smith, though, Alexander Doniphan, who was Smith's former attorney and the brigadier general in the Missouri militia, refused to carry out the order.
So he had a friend in high places.
Yeah, he had a friend who was part of the militia who said, I'm not executing Joseph Smith. I know him. He's an all right guy.
Man, he could have done us a solid, man. He could have just...
So Smith was instead sent to state court for a preliminary hearing where several of his former allies testified against him. Smith and five others, including Rigdon, were charged with overt acts of treason and transferred to jail at Liberty, Missouri to await trial. So Smith was in prison for a few months. Apparently Rigdon, his little right-hand man, was kind of sick and was starting to whine, and that put a strain on their relationship. Meanwhile, Brigham Young, the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, rose to prominence when he organized the move of the 1,400 Mormon refugees to Illinois, because he had 1,400 members at this point.
Yeah.
So he said, all right, we got to get out of fucking Missouri. They don't want us. We're going to go to Illinois.
Are they starting to see a pattern here?
Yeah.
Like, no yeah. state wants you.
So they said that Smith bore his imprisonment pretty stoically. He wasn't, like, crying and whining, oh, poor me. So he was on. He was basically put on trial. In his defense, he apologized for the activities of the Danites. He basically moderated his position. He said that, you know, we can't be militaristic like this in the future.
That didn't stick.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That doesn't stick.
From what I understand, that didn't hang out for very long.
Well, he doesn't quite get that violent again.
He doesn't.
He also urged them to moderate their antagonism towards the non-Mormons. On April 6th, after a grand jury hearing in Davis County, Smith and his companions escaped custody, almost certainly with the connivance of the sheriff and the guards. So basically, the sheriff and the guards, they see that this is just heading towards a fucking disaster. And they're like, it'd be a lot easier on us if this fucker just escaped.
Yeah, a lot.
Right.
So they just basically, like, you're free now. Illinois' problem.
We're just going to leave the cell door unlocked and go to dinner, you know.
So Brigham Young oversaw the move of all of the Mormons to Illinois. They decided to establish their own town in Illinois called Nauvoo, which I've actually been to the town of Nauvoo, Illinois. It's still a very Mormon town.
Does it suck there?
It sucks. Yes.
Okay.
It sucks
it's
completely.
It's filled to the brim with Mormons, dude.
I was there at 8 o'clock at night. It was like a ghost town. They're all in bed.
Dude, we got to go to Nauvoo in our magic underwear and
it's
dance
right
around.
It's right by Keokuk.
We'll get our girlfriends some magic underwear and we'll just prance around.
You remember that Hans Mill massacre I talked about earlier?
Yeah.
That was the media kind of played that in the Mormons' favor. They were like, this is fucked up what happened to these people for just having a different religion. So Illinois accepted the Mormon refugees, pretty open-armed, like, yeah, come here, come to Illinois. We accept you. Smith purchased some high-priced swampy woodland in the hamlet of Commerce. Smith was also attempted to portray the Latter-day Saints as an oppressed minority, unsuccessfully petitioned the federal government for help in obtaining reparations. During the summer of 1839, while the Latter-day Saints in Nauvoo suffered from a malaria epidemic, Smith sent Brigham Young and other apostles to missions in Europe, where they made numerous converts, many of them poor factory workers. So they started to
spread
their crazy religion to the European continent. Smith was able to attract a few wealthy and influential converts in Illinois, including John C. Bennett, who was an Illinois quartermaster general. Bennett used his connections in the Illinois legislature to obtain unusually liberal charter for the new city of Nauvoo.
So how did this happen? Like, how did this dude ingratiate himself to people in power to the point where he was basically untouchable?
He was obviously a very charismatic guy. Maybe he really was that fucking good looking. Maybe that really is a fucking honest depiction.
Honestly, he was really good at fucking networking, man. He always seemed to make contacts. I mean, think about this.
His
network saved his life on numerous occasions, dude.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously had a lot of charisma.
He was
likeability.
Very persuasive, clearly. I mean, because he persuaded his way out of trouble so many times. Like, he's fucking found by a military tribunal to be guilty of treason and somehow just,
some guy in the military who's just friends with is like, no, I'm not killing Joseph.
You know,
he meets
the right people in Illinois after that, and they're like, you know what, let's basically give him a town he can do whatever the fuck he wants in. Just, a town that's just for Mormons.
This point in his career, he starts to reveal the doctrine of plural marriage, polygamy.
Ooh.
He got bored with his wife, in other words.
He started telling it to his closest male associates, including
Bennett. It's like, dudes, you know what, dude? This whole one wife thing? Moroni told me we don't got to do that shit no more, man.
Nah, man, nah.
Moroni came to me
Moroni
in a vision
said
was
we
like,
get all the pussy we want,
dude,
man.
Dude, Elohim is fucking nonstop. You should be fucking nonstop, too.
This dude, Bennett, the guy that he converted.
Without some steam, Bennett.
Was basically like, hell yeah, that sounds great to me. So,
I mean, what dude wouldn't?
Right. So Bennett starts using this as an excuse to, sleep with a bunch of women, of course.
What a shock.
So embarrassing rumors get started. I mean, they're not rumors. They're just true that, that the Mormons are now, like, turning into a weird sex cult. Bennett was forced to resign as the mayor of Nauvoo. In retaliation, Bennett left Smith's following and wrote a lurid expose of the Mormons.
Ooh.
Bennett's tell-all.
I've actually been to this temple in Nauvoo. This picture doesn't really do justice to how large it is.
It's huge.
It's a big-ass fucking temple. And it wasn't complete during Smith's lifetime, but he did start the construction of it and help conceive of it and stuff. This is where things get a little dense, and it's kind of hard for me to skip over a lot of this stuff. But there was a lot of the modern doctrine of Mormonism was kind of conceived during this age in Nauvoo, because this is the first time the Mormons really had their own town, their own stronghold.
Yeah, they had stability for the first time, right?
So this is when they could really start to go hog wild. This is when they introduced that baptism for the dead concept. This is when a lot of the crazy.
This is when Joseph Smith has to innovate. He's all like, shit.
Happening.
Polygamy, it looks
people
like.
People in the town are getting bored, man. He's like, I gotta come up with some shit.
So after he kind of got like, yeah, I'm fucking powerful now. By mid-1842, popular opinion had turned against the Mormons. After an unknown assailant shot and wounded Missouri Governor Lilburn Boggs.
You motherfuckers, dude. No, did he live?
He lived.
Oh, thank goodness.
He was wounded. He didn't get killed.
What a bunch of fucking assholes. What did Lilburn do? Like, they're gone. He's Missouri. It's two states ago.
So, even though the evidence was circumstantial, Boggs ordered Smith's extradition.
No shit.
Certain he would be killed if he ever returned to Missouri, Smith went into hiding twice during the next 5 months before the U.S. District Attorney for Illinois argued that Smith's extradition to Missouri would be unconstitutional. And so that didn't happen. In December of 1843, Smith petitioned Congress to make Nauvoo an independent territory with the right to call out federal troops in its defense. You could probably imagine how that went.
No.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
The federal government's like, ah. So Smith then wrote to the leading presidential candidates and asked them what they would do to protect the Mormons, and he received a bunch of noncommittal or negative responses. So then Smith announced that he was running for president of the United States. He suspended his regular church operations and started trying to run a presidential campaign. He organized something called the Secret Council of 50. The council had the authority to decide which national or state laws Mormons should obey. So basically, they're looking at the laws of the nation and being like, should we obey this law? No, no. That's not Mormon. This one we can obey because it's Mormon enough.
So this is where their separatist shit really started.
Yeah, they're starting
with
a, to be
with
like,
the attempt
fuck
for
you.
A presidential campaign, but during the campaign he creates his advisory council, who's just like, all right, here are the laws we can follow, and here are the ones we don't.
Well, they finally have a town that's pretty much just their town. Well, they decide what goes and you know what doesn't go.
And they also start planning to set up settlements in Texas, California, and Oregon, where they believe
go west.
That they
yeah.
can be. Even further away from government.
Well, they're
going to
be in territories. They're not going to be in states then, so they're going to have a lot
right,
more leeway.
Right, they're not
leeway.
States at that time. So, early 1844, a rift develops between Smith and a half dozen of his closest associates, most notably William
shock.
Law, who was Smith's most trusted counselor at the time, and Robert Foster, a general of the Nauvoo Legion. They disagreed with Smith about how to manage Nauvoo's economy. And remember, it was bad economic decisions that led to the fall of the Kirtland, Ohio.
Well,
settlement.
And pretty much every fallout he's had with his closest associates, too. It seems right. to be followed by some kind of bad economic decision.
Right. You know, when you let a treasure hunter set economic policy, that's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
Apparently, Smith had also proposed marriage to both of their wives.
Oh.
So he was like, yeah, fuck this guy, marry me. You know, because he's trying, and he's really trying to corner the pussy market.
He really was, dude. Fuck. No wonder they didn't like him.
So eventually, Smith starts to believe that they're plotting against him, and he excommunicates them from the church. So they form a competing church.
Wow, dude.
It just gets messy. And their competing church is able to procure indictments against Smith for perjury and polygamy. So on June 7th, the dissidents published the first and only issue of Nauvoo Expositor, which is calling for reform within the church. They're basically trying to Martin Luther him at this point.
Right.
They're appealing for the political views, appealing to the political views, rather, of the county's other faiths, as well as those of former Mormons. The paper decried Smith's new doctrines of many gods, alluding to Smith's theocratic aspirations, and called for a repeal of the Nauvoo City Charter.
So
it also attacked Smith's practice
of
polygamy.
So they just whipped up everyone that was already dissenting against
right.
him, and the other people that didn't like him, just the non-Mormons. So he basically just whipped up sentiment against Smith.
So here's where Smith really fucks up. Because he fears that this newspaper, the Expositor, is going to be a problem.
Well, it already is. I mean,
yeah. So
he fucking shuts
the town. Basically, orders all of the copies of the Expositor destroyed. And Smith, who's fearing
seditious lies,
who's afraid that this is whipping up another mob attack, decides that the best way to avoid that is to destroy the newspaper. What he fails to realize is that destroying the newspaper is a way better way to whip up a mob attack than
the newspaper
than
ever
the
would
newspaper
have been.
Ever would have been. Yes.
Yeah, because yeah, the newspaper is filled with lies.
So after he destroyed the newspaper, go figure, a fucking mob gathers.
An angry mob gathers.
Martial law has to be declared in the town. Officials in Carthage respond by mobilizing a small detachment of state militia. The governor, Thomas Ford,
once again
threatens to raise a larger militia unless Smith and the Nauvoo Council surrender themselves. Illinois at this point, kind of regretting letting these people in with open arms.
Shit.
Smith initially flees against the across the Mississippi River, shortly returns and surrenders. On June 23rd, Smith and his brother Hiram rode to Carthage to stand trial for inciting a riot. Once the Smiths were in custody, the charges were increased to treason.
Oops.
Kind of a fucking bait. Just a fucked up bait and switch.
Yeah.
Right, but whatever. On June 27th, 1844, an armed mob with blackened faces storms Carthage, the Carthage jail where Joseph Smith and Hiram are being held. Hiram was able to... he was trying to secure the exit door. He was killed instantly by getting shot in the face. Smith's fired three shots from a pepper box pistol his friend Cyrus Wheelock had lent him, wounding three men. Before he sprang for the window, he was shot multiple times before falling out of the window, crying, "Oh, Lord, my God." He died shortly after hitting the ground, but was shot several more times before the mob dispersed. Here's a depiction of that event. You see Smith here falling from the window, being shot at by a large mob. Even after he was dead when he hit the ground, but they decided to shoot him a few more times. Five men were later charged in Smith's murder, but all of them were acquitted.
Yeah, acquitted, of course.
Smith was buried in Nauvoo and is interred there at the Smith Family Cemetery. After his death, non-Mormon newspapers were almost unanimous in portraying him as a religious fanatic. Conversely, within Mormonism, Smith was remembered first and foremost as a prophet. He was martyred to seal the testimony of his faith. And of course, you know, Jesus Christ was, you know, of course, murdered by the Romans in an execution. So this kind of, you know, from the Mormon perspective, fit him in with that tradition.
Well, yeah,
like,
played into the mythology.
He's a martyr. You know, he was killed by this angry mob of people.
Just couldn't stand what he stood for and what he believed in.
You know, they didn't understand what he was fighting for.
Now, of course, in your research, TJ, you found out that the story of his death that you just portrayed is wrong, right?
That's from several sources. What do you think? How do you think he died?
It's not how I think he died. It's common knowledge that that story never happened. There was never a storming of the jail.
All right.
Joseph Smith was in that jail. He was killed in that jail, but it wasn't by a mob, and he wasn't shot, and he didn't fall out a fucking window. That was all added later. It was Lilburn Boggs, dude. He finally got sick of Joseph Smith fucking everything up, going state to state, and Lilburn Boggs himself snuck into the jail and popped him right in the head.
Lil Burn.
Right.
And Lil Burn Boggs.
Lil Burn Boggs, dude. You crossed the wrong motherfucker. Number one, cross Lil Burn Boggs by fucking with the militia in his state. And number two, send in some dumbass Mormon to shoot him afterwards for revenge. It was just one step too many.
Lil Burn Boggs,
dude, should have been like,
got his revenge.
They give him those speeches like, should have finished the job, Joseph Smith.
Yep. He was like, You will never live to rue the day that you cross Lilburn Boggs, motherfucker.
Lilburn Boggs.
Boom!
Lilburn!
Kill Joseph Smith.
I mean, I can tell you, I can look up Lilburn Boggs and see.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you that he's the one what done it. Look at those cold, steely eyes.
I mean, CJ, actually, we lived briefly in that part of the country, drove through this town several times, and there's really nothing there. Now, that's like the big claim to fame is like, they killed Joseph Smith here. It's like, yeah, like 150 years ago.
He was the sixth governor of Missouri. He's mostly remembered for his interactions with Joseph Smith and his extermination order for the Mormons.
His execute order 66.
Execute order 66. I mean, there's not really much more about his life.
Darn.
So I don't think there's...
We need to get Ken Burns on this. We need a Lilburn Boggs documentary, an eight-parter.
Yeah, I don't know.
Get apart.
Come on, Ken Burns.
It doesn't look like he really did
it. You're not getting it, Paul. Sorry. You're not going to get Lilburn Boggs.
They've whitewashed his history because of the assassination that he perpetrated on Joseph Smith. Ah. They don't want people to know about Lilburn Boggs and what he did for this country. He was trying to stop the Mormons.
And you know,
he didn't succeed. He did his best. He was only one man. But he cut the head off the fucking snake.
He didn't cut the head off the snake. He cut the head off the fucking Hydra, Paul.
That's true.
After the death of Joseph Smith, the Mormon religion was carried on by Brigham Young, who actually was a much better leader.
Oh, yeah.
He's a dapper gent, too.
Yeah, he's kind of looks like an old version of Paul, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Got a little bit of that going on.
Got a little of the Brigham Young.
So Brigham Young, I didn't really pull anything about him, but because I actually looked at his life, and you could actually probably make a follow-up episode on him.
I'm sure.
But he led the Mormons to Utah, which, you know, now
still
that's,
there to this
that's
day.
Their fucking state. He really is responsible for the Mormon religion beginning to prosper like it never could under Joseph Smith.
I mean, it really could have died with Joseph Smith.
Yeah, he was he became the first governor of Utah. You know, and he really carried the torch in a way that Joseph Smith, I mean, he was just a more competent leader than Joseph Smith ever was. Joseph Smith was definitely a very charismatic guy, but you see how impractical he was. You see how he consistently made wrong decisions that led to extraordinarily resounding failures. And Brigham Young, he wasn't similarly, inclined to those particular weaknesses.
Was he was an advisor of Smith's before he died?
Well, he actually, remember, he rose to prominence when Smith was first imprisoned.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he kind of took over.
Yeah, he kind of took the whole over move. Then
and became a prominent member. Him and Smith never seemed like they were super close, but obviously he respected what Brigham could do in terms of organizing people and stuff like that. But once Smith was gone, people naturally fell towards Brigham Young as the new leader. He obviously had better leadership qualifications. The Mormon, the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints flourished under him. It established what is still its major base of... let's just look at the history of the fucking Mormon Church before then. It was like, let's go to this town. Oh, shit. Disaster. We're kicked out. Let's go to this town. Oh, shit. Disaster. We're kicked out. Let's go to this town. Oh, shit. Joseph Smith is dead.
This guy takes over, and it's all like, oh, we found a place to call our own.
Let's go to Utah. They go to Utah. They're there to this fucking day.
I mean, yeah, there was definitely problems in Utah, but...
Sure.
You know, they manage them a lot better, even saying that.
I mean, yeah. It's still a Mormon-controlled state to this fucking day.
I mean, so. I think I read something that, you know, increasingly it won't be, but it's taken over 100 fucking years for that to be the case.
Right. So, this guy is mostly responsible for that, and maybe we'll do a follow-up episode on him at some point. It's not on the roster right now. I'm not going to say it is, but you definitely could learn. There's definitely more to talk about when it comes to the Mormon fucking church.
I'm sure we'll do a follow up because it'll kind of be like what happened after Joseph Smith's death. And
I know what
happened. There's a lot of meat on the bone.
What happened, Paul?
Lilburn Boggs took over the church.
Oh, shit, no, dude. Didn't.
And his puppet, Brigham Young.
No, Paul.
Stayed in the public eye while Lilburn Boggs.
You know, Paul just loves fat old time politicians, dude.
Oh, hell.
He's got a
to
fucking
the, yeah,
weak,
dude.
He's weak in the knees. He sees a fucking fat old timey politician. He's like, Paul's like, that could have been me.
Yeah.
Kind of a short episode tonight, but we have really nothing else to cover. We covered the life of Joseph Smith. We did a basic rundown of the theology of Mormonism. There is a little bit more to the story. We could probably do a part two on this. If you want that, give us a thumbs up. Let us know. But for now, we're out of stuff. We'll see you guys Friday with Flash Fried, and hopefully we'll have some further announcements.
Wednesday
for Flash Fried, and then Friday we'll see you patrons for another episode of Deep Fat
Fried.
And
we will have announcements
Who knows what that'll be about.
I believe we owe them a 12-hour show.
We'll be announcing when the 12-hour show is going to
happen. Which is
going to
happen for everybody, right?
And that's going to be public. That's going to be for the public people. That's,
well, the peoples.
You know, not just the
patrons. For all to see.
But that is to celebrate us reaching, how many patrons was it?
3,000, I believe.
2,000.
It was actually 2,000.
Okay. We haven't gotten 3 yet.
We haven't quite gotten
That's
3 yet.
That's the 24-hour show.
But 3,000 is a 24-hour show. If you guys want to become patrons, we deeply appreciate it. Also, me and Paul are going to be getting you guys some exclusive movie stuff pretty soon for our patrons. We got three. We actually have two reviews we've already done that we're going to be releasing to you, and we're going to be doing another one later this week. So stay tuned for that. And we got a bunch of more stuff coming for patrons this month. If you're a patron, be sure to
enjoy
have your
alerts on
Patreon
buffet.
So that you can see and put stuff
clean
out there
your
for
plate.
You.
Yeah, there's meals being served up all the time.
We thank you guys for watching. Thanks for watching Deep Fat Fried.
Deep Fat Fried.
Deep Fat Fried. And we got Deep lots of cool shit coming.
We
looked at something earlier. It's going to blow your fucking socks.
Oh, it's going to blow your fucking testicles
your
right out of the
gonna
sack.
Your socks are going to fly off your fucking
socks
feet.
Socks are going to fly right off the feet. All right, so thank you guys for watching. We will see you motherfuckers later. Peace.